The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Denny Carter, where we will be completing our division preview series with the NFC East. We'll be joined by NBC Sports Philadelphia's Dave Zangaro to discuss the Eagles, and the New York Daily News' Pat Leonard to talk about the Giants. Denny and I will then dive into the Cowboys and maybe the Commanders. We might find a player worth talking about.
We'll see.
We'll just see. But first, it is our pleasure to welcome in NBC Sports Philadelphia's Dave Zangaro, who... we'll take you behind the curtain. I just spent 10 minutes before the show trying to say his last name. And Dave,
I think I nailed it.
Yeah.
Crushed it.
I'll have forgotten how to like say it by the end of the show, though. I do know. Well, Dave, let's just start at the beginning then. Jalen Hurts, that's the player every fantasy manager is talking about. He's the guy on the cover of our magazine this year, kind of because he's the classic. I don't know. Are you a fantasy player, Dave, by the way?
I am. I'm not super into it. But I get it, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the, like, it's quite common in fantasy for a quarterback to be better in fantasy in real life, particularly if they are a rushing threat. So Jalen Hurts is kind of like a fantasy superstar already, but we know in real life, you know, he's not anywhere close to that proven. What have you seen, what have you, like, just with your own eyes, seen out of Jalen Hurts this summer? And do you think there will be enough improvement from Hurts to kind of open up this passing attack this season?
Yeah, that's really the biggest question about the Eagles in general. He's still going to have that running ability. It's going to be there. And I think in these practices during training camp, you kind of forget about it a little bit because it's not really conducive to showing that off. That'll be there. He has to improve as a passer. And a lot of it will be helped by A.J. Brown joining him in Philly. And, you know, I think the one thing where Hurts really has to improve is not just accuracy. I feel like that's too big of an umbrella, but it's really his ability to throw with anticipation and get the ball out on time. And there have been moments where, you know, in his career where that just hasn't been the case. And there's a big difference, you know, if he's throwing a slant, there's a big difference to throwing it on the numbers or throwing it to a spot where he can lead the receiver and they can pick up some yak. And I think that's kind of the next step in his development. We've seen some good signs with A.J. Brown, who really is like the type of receiver they needed to round out this group, because they had Devontae Smith, who's a great route runner, really smooth, and they had Quez Watkins, who's the 4-3 guy. But A.J. Brown is a nice mixture of all that. He's a fast guy, but big body, has the ability to win 50-50 balls, and in the middle of the field can give them a weapon, because they, if you kind of look at those spray charts from last year, not a lot of activity in the middle of the field, most of it to the right side. So having a player like A.J. Brown should open up a little bit more of the field.
We'll ask you a little bit more about A.J. Brown in a minute, but then with Hurts. So we spent a lot of time talking about his passing, and that's just kind of like the obsessive focus, because we kind of just take his rushing for granted. But, you know, he got banged up late last season. He's the classic, taking a lot of hits. Do you think there might be any change in Jalen Hurts' rushing usage this season, or are the legs, the rushing, just too valuable for the Eagles to really consider that?
You know what the funny thing is? Like last year, they started the season with a ton of read option, and there are even some RPOs in the mix. And they kind of took that out of the offense, and the rushing didn't struggle. So I think that's going to be there. And even if they're not, if they don't kind of put in those design quarterback runs, he's still going to pick up yards on off schedule plays. That's not going anywhere. Is he going to score 10 touchdowns on the
ground again?
I mean, probably not.
Oh, not the wrong answer. Got it. No. That's not what fantasy managers. You've just been canceled by fantasy managers.
The passing touchdowns are going to improve. I think that's going to balance out a little bit. I don't think 10 rushing touchdowns is sustainable, but I also think 16 passing touchdowns is too low. So overall, I think the touchdown numbers might go up. Getting 10 rushing touchdowns as a quarterback is an awful lot. And we'll talk about Miles Sanders, I'm sure. He didn't have any rushing touchdowns last year. It's hard for me to think that that's going to happen again. So I think we're going to see a little bit more balance out of that offense in terms of where the touchdowns come from.
It would be incredible if Miles Sanders did not add to that total.
Would be quite. He seems like the kind of player that might challenge accept that. I really, really hope he does not.
Let's hope not. So getting back to AJ Brown for just a moment, Dave, drawing rave reviews. I saw a tweet today that said that he could see, quote, 11 billion targets this year. So I think there's been a comparison with several people, both in like real and fantasy world, about Jalen Hurts as a passer coming into his third season and some of the parallels for Josh Allen's third season. Not saying he's going to make that jump, that kind of jump, but the Bills, they were very run heavy in Josh Allen's first 2 years. They brought in Stephon Diggs. They shifted offensive philosophy. Now the Eagles have brought in AJ Brown, who is, you know, clearly an alpha wide receiver one in any offense. Do you see that sort of shift coming to this philosophical shift coming to the Philadelphia offense?
In a way, you know, last year they were the 25th ranked passing offense in the league, and you can win like that, right? But it's a lot harder. And I think they realized that they just have to be better as a passing. They wanted to be that last year, and kind of out of necessity, they shifted away from it. And they became a run heavy team because they had this great offensive line, and they figured, all right, we have some running backs who can do it, and we have this quarterback who's able to do it. But I think they, after the season, they looked at it and said, look, our best chance to be successful long term is to be a better passing offense. And I think that's expected. But the funny thing is, they've really added one starter on that side of the ball, and it's right. AJ Brown. Everyone else is pretty much the same. You bring back the same quarterback, you bring back the same group of running backs. The offensive line has changed a little bit, but it's still very good, one of the best in the league. They have Dallas Goedert, who was here last year as their number one tight end. The thing that's changed is they have AJ Brown. So it kind of tells you how much of their improvement or expected improvement in the passing game really just comes down to his presence. And it shouldn't be overstated. I mean, 11 billion, I would take the under on that. He's getting targeted an awful lot in training camp. And Devontae Smith's been a little banged up, but even before Smith had missed practice, most of the targets were going to A.J. Brown, and I don't think that's a coincidence.
So you talked about Jalen kind of like the next step in his passing game being like improving his anticipation. I mean, A.J. Brown is one of the most like dynamic after-the-catch receivers in the entire league. Have you seen that being an emphasis? Just trying to get A.J. Brown in space, trying to get him where he can have a head of steam, or is he being used that way or more conventionally? Just how has he been being used in camp?
Yeah, no, it's a very good. It's funny. I'm actually writing a story right now about AJ Brown and his yak. He's very good at it. Obviously, he's like 230 pounds, strong hands, runs through every catch. So
he's like a bigger Percy Harvin. Like he is.
I can kind of see that. There aren't many guys who fit that profile. You know, Debo's kind of a unicorn in a lot of ways, but a lot of the similar size, speed, you know, correlation as AJ Brown, just a big guy who's very fast. And in order to get the most out of him, you need those plays to be in rhythm. And that has been encouraging. We've seen a lot of, you know, a slant being on time means so much to what they want to do offensively. And, you know, Nick Sirianni always talks about explosive plays. And I think it's really important to remember that explosive plays in the pass game don't mean chucking the ball 30, 40 yards downfield. In this offense, they love slants. They love crossers. They love to be able to get the ball on a completable pass, an easy pass, get it in your receiver's hands, and then let them do the rest. And it's going to be a big part of this team, I think. And You know, that he looks back to his time, really even before he was in Indianapolis with Frank Reich, when he was in San Diego back in the day with like Tyrell Williams, who's a super speedy guy, but they made their money on the crossers. It was him kind of dragging across the field, hitting him in rhythm and letting him do the rest. So I think that's going to be a big part of what they try to do.
So obviously it's kind of like spoiler alert. AJ Brown will be a big part of the offense. But like behind AJ Brown. So again, we're talking about this offense, at least for fantasy purposes, hopefully becoming more pass heavy, creating more targets. Cause there's a lot of talented guys, but I mean, so we know AJ Brown though is going to be, he was acquired to be the alpha, the clear cut wide receiver one with guys like Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, as secondary pass catchers, and will probably still be, you know, a run first offense, even if it's more pass heavy. Do you see, like, this is like kind of like a pure statistical question. I mean, do you see them getting enough looks to produce numbers that will satisfy fantasy managers? I mean, any kind of thing where this, like, you know, so a lot of three catch games from Devontae Smith, you know, a lot of three catch games from Dallas Goedert, or do you think they can kind of more consistently kind of stuff the box score this year?
Yeah, it might be tricky at times this year, because if teams are going to really kind of shade coverage to AJ Brown, the Eagles feel like they have the other pass catchers to get involved, and it kind of starts with Devontae and Dallas Goedert. I feel more confident about Dallas Goedert having a very consistent high production season, because you looked at his production last year after the Zach Ertz trade. You really have to break it down, because early last season, they were in this weird situation where no one thought Zach Ertz was going to be here. It was kind of weird. And then
that was one of the weirdest. I haven't thought about it in a while. That was a weird summer.
No one thought he was going to be here. And then week one comes and he's on the team and you go, all right, well, they're going to have to run 12 personnel. And they're, you know, it was kind of weird and disjointed. But once that trade happened, Dallas Goedert became tight end one. He was on a 1,000-yard pace, so he was much better after that, and he's looked very good in camp. He has a real connection with Jalen Hurts. So if A.J. Brown is one in terms of targets we've seen this summer, Dallas Goedert's 1A. I mean, he's gotten a ton of looks. Devontae Smith could end up being the odd man out here if you're talking in terms of targets, and he's a really talented player, and they want to run the offense through those three guys. It's just – you start to break down the numbers and you think, oh, he's at there's a 1,000-yard season. There's not going to be that many yards. I mean, what's the over-under on Jalen Hurts passing yards? You know, you have to figure out where they're coming from. And then even after that, I mean, Quez Watkins, who is a pretty talented third receiver, had over 600 yards last year. Probably not going to be able to do that again, just if everyone stays healthy in front of him.
It's not the Oprah meme where you get 1,000 yards, you get 1,000 yards, everybody gets.
You start, and it's funny because you start talking about these players and you have a lot of confidence in them. And even Zach Pascal as a four is a pretty good four, but the numbers that they could put up, if you do that and then you add them up, you go, well, Jalen's not throwing for 6,000 yards. That's not the way any of this works. So there are going to be games where one of those guys just doesn't produce, and they could end up being a pretty frustrating team from a fantasy perspective because of it.
Denny's going to get to the backfield in just a second, but so Devontae Smith, you mentioned him maybe being the odd man out of the big three, quote unquote. Is there a fourth pass catcher in this offense? Is it Zach Pascal? Is it maybe Kenneth Gainwell? Is it Quez Watkins? I mean, Jalen Reagor going to make the team? Just real quick, like, who do you see being the fourth pass catcher?
Yeah, it's probably Quez Watkins. Just because they're going to run a lot of 11 personnel, they're going to have three receivers on the field. And he's been the guy. I mean, he'll primarily work from the slot, and they'll have A.J. Brown at times kind of move inside just for matchup purposes. But when they're in 11 personnel with three receivers, Quez Watkins is going to be the guy out there. I think Gainwell is going to be steady. You know, I think he'll have a steadier role, but I don't think the production for him is necessarily going to jump because Miles Sanders is still there. Their primary back. But when you're talking about like smooth pass catchers, Kenneth Gainwell is a very smooth pass catcher. I think his ceiling in terms of production though is still somewhat limited because the snaps have to work out in a way for him to have that production. I'm not so sure that's going to happen.
You know, speaking of the backfield, you know, Miles Sanders famously said earlier this offseason, "Don't draft me fantasy." some of us are listening, others are not. And,
I'm not listening.
Nick Sirianni has said, that he is the top running back. He said that back in late July. And then we got a report this week from Sports Illustrated saying that Kenneth Gainwell is, quote, penciled in for high leverage situations like third downs, the hurry up offense, and goal line work, which makes sense because he last year he was very good and efficient pass catcher out of the Eagles backfield. Does Miles Sanders have to, I don't want to say worry, but contend with Gainwell and Boston Scott, or is it mostly Gainwell that's going to threaten his snap share?
I think it's mostly Gainwell. I think they look at Boston Scott as a nice option if Miles misses time, which has happened. He's missed 9 games over the last 2 years. They look at Boston as a guy who can come in and carry the load for an entire game, whereas, Gainwell is going to mix in there in, passing situations is where he's going to thrive, and not just as a pass catcher. He's really improved in pass protection, which, if you can't do that, you're probably not going to see the field
right
in those situations. But I got to tell you, Miles has looked really strong running the football this summer. His lower body looks stronger than I've ever seen it. A lot more explosive runs out of him, which is, he's had such a weird career. I mean, his rookie year was 500 yards receiving. The next couple of years, he's had, just high yard per carry averages, but, no touchdowns last year. He keeps getting hurt. It's a year for him to finally put it together. At least that's his hope, because it's also a contract season for him. And I don't know where you would start right now. If you had to give him a contract, I don't know what it would look like, because it hasn't been a complete season for him yet.
Do you buy into that, by the way, with Kenneth Gainwell? Like, is he going to be a guy like the most trusted back, or is that kind of like camp noise and Miles Sanders isn't going to be seeding like every important, not every, isn't going to be seed. Who's going to see more important touches, Miles Sanders or Kenneth Gainwell? Kind of like the money situations, third and short, the goal line, like a big passing down.
Yeah, I think we're going to see Miles in there a lot, but I do think Gainwell is going to mix in those situations, because just from the pure receiving standpoint, he makes sense. And they did that with him last year too. That's not anything new. I mean, he became, in a lot of games, he became their 2-minute guy. They liked him out there because they can, it's not just him in the backfield. They can put him out wide. They can put him in the slot. They can do a lot more things with him than they can Miles. If you're talking in terms of pure runner, Miles is miles ahead of him, right? He's just much better.
You tried to not do it, and then you just had to.
I tried to. I'll go for it.
You had to do it.
Yeah, he just says he's a better runner, but Gainwell does things better than Miles in other areas. And Sanders had that. You look back at his career in that 500-yard receiving rookie season, but then you look at the totality of it and think, all right, well, what's the fluke here? Is it that year or the years that have come after it? And he just hasn't been able to be that consistent as a pass catcher. So he works on it. His hands just aren't as smooth as Gainwell. And I think for that reason, we're still going to see those third down snaps, those passing situations kind of be split between them.
Dave, before we let you go, I'll put you on the spot. Will Miles Sanders score a touchdown?
I will say, yeah. If the over-under is one half of a touchdown, I will take the over.
You'll smash the over on that. Yeah. That's heartening, at least. So, Miles, if you're listening, fantasy managers, Miles Sanders will score a touchdown this year, at least.
In week one.
Maybe probably. Two. Yeah, then, maybe three. Well, Dave, great stuff on the Eagles. Always this kind of – the Eagles are always a fascinating team. Like, a year or two ago, I thought Howie Roseman was like, well, Howie Roseman has had a really interesting run in Philadelphia, but he's about out the door. And now they're, they're back. They've rebuilt both sides in the trenches. Interesting team, like a lot of interesting. A real interesting question, by the way, before they go, who's going to call plays? Has that been sorted out?
It'll be Shane Steichen.
Okay, so we'll be because Nick Sirianni, I feel like, was kind of cagey on that all offseason.
Yeah, it's so. He wants to make it very clear, and this is why he was kind of cagey on it, that, him and Shane have worked together for so long, and they kind of go through situations throughout the week. So it's not like Shane has the whole playbook to call from, but they have plays that they, like, week by week, all right, these are our red zone plays. So he's calling from, like, a shortened menu, and Nick always has the power to override him, but no, Shane's calling the plays.
So that's, I mean, I guess that I was gonna say that's good to know. Then I was about to say, I don't really know why that's good to know. I guess it doesn't really change anything.
Well, he began doing that during last season. So you kind of look at the second half and you think, well, he ran the ball quite a bit, but I also think that was a function of what the offense was at that point. And now they have AJ Brown. So I think there will be a shift.
Yeah. That was just like survival mode. Cause like, it's been kind of memory hold. Like you said, where the Eagles were actually extraordinarily pass heavy before that Bucs game.
Yeah. Too much.
It was like, yeah. Like in the middle of the game, it's pretty rare you can see an offensive philosophy change in real time. And like the second half of that Bucs game, you basically saw Nick Sirianni like going like George Costanza, like I'm just going to do the exact opposite. And now we're running.
And then the next game, so they had the Raiders game and they tried to run early in that one. And then Miles Sanders got hurt and they got behind. So then they started to pass the ball more. But it really, that Raiders game was kind of where it started. And after, I give them credit though. A lot of teams won't just change their offensive philosophy to what works. And with that offensive line, I mean, they have a lot of power up there and it makes sense to run the ball.
Yeah. And that was especially for a first year head coach, that was a pretty gutsy decision for Nick Sirianni. So he does deserve a lot of credit for that. And Dave, thank you so much for your time. It's just going to be another interesting Eagles season, I'm sure.
Always. Yeah.
Who even knows? Yeah. What we'll be talking about the Eagles this time next year. But excellent stuff. Thank you so much, Dave Zangaro, NBC Sports Philadelphia. What's your Twitter handle again?
DZangaro NBCS.
Check him out on Twitter. Awesome stuff, Dave. Thank you so much for joining us. Denny, we'll be back soon after this, the New York Daily News's Pat Leonard. But first, a message.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
The Fantasy Football Expo presented by NBC Sports Edge is coming to Canton, Ohio this weekend. Join some of the top experts in the country, including myself, Craig Dennis Carter, Patrick Corain, Lawrence Jackson, Kyle Dvorchik, many, many more. Zach Kruger is going to be there at the only true Fantasy Football Expo in the country. Tickets are available at thefantasyfootballexpo.com. Use promo code NBCPass at checkout to save $20. Danny will be joined by Mr. Pat Leonard in just a minute, but he's a busy man at New York Giants, Football Giants training camp, which by the dark secrets in New Jersey. It's not in New York. People don't talk about this.
No one has ever said that. So this is the first. This is the first time hearing of it.
I've never seen that brought up like, really weirdly in like Twitter arguments back and forth in my mentions.
Yeah,
like I've seen like really weird territorial New York arguments in my Twitter mentions.
Yeah, well, remember when the Bills declared themselves New York's only team?
Yeah, well, a few weeks ago, I tweeted a picture. So you know, how, like the Bills. The Giants are wearing like these throwbacks from the late 80s, early 90s that happen to look exactly like the Bills' current uniforms.
Yes.
Like this, I tweeted, it says, part of the culture change, Brian Daboll is now making the Giants wear the Bills' uniforms. And this set off like humongous, like sectarian New York violence.
Yes. Yes.
And my mentions, like who like actually was wearing whose uniforms. Like, well, I don't know if you heard, we wore these in a Super Bowl guy.
Right.
Some of those turn into like lots of very intense New York, New Jersey talk.
Right. We first wore these in World War II.
Yeah.
If you want to go back that far, then it's us. It's us.
If you
want to
really go back,
maybe read a book.
Yeah, maybe read a book. While we wait for Pat, we might as well start on the team that I said I didn't even know if we were going to talk about. the Washington Commanders take command. They're taking command at training camp with, I mean, they're getting dozens of fans.
Tens of fans, yeah. And I think they each pay $100 to get into the game.
Yeah, they do. No, that's just for the ticket. The parking's $250, of course. you remember the craziest Daniel Snyder fact was that you weren't even allowed, I don't know if this is still true, you weren't allowed to walk into FedEx Field. Like, if you somehow managed to get there without a vehicle, which I'm sure is, like, impossible, you'd, like, pay a fee. Yeah, I mean, there's no way. That's, like, the most impenetrable, like, non-car fortress in America, probably.
Well, they have our metro, our D.C. area metro, which runs into Maryland, obviously, it supposedly has a Landover stop, which is, you know, that's where you go to go to a Washington game. It's nowhere close. Like, you know, it, like, yes, it drops you in the state of Maryland, and good luck, good luck getting to the stadium, guys.
Yeah. But he would charge you like a fee if you somehow managed to like walk into the stadium. I don't know if that's still true, but anyways, yeah, dozens of fans at Commanders camp. And I mean, I guess we'll start with the Commanders. Terry McLaurin was the wide receiver 33 by average PPR points last season. Just, you know, not at all equal to his talent, just being kind of wasted and withered in this offense with guys like Taylor Heinicke. Now it's Carson Wentz, who is not exactly known as the wide receiver whisperer. And I just, but so he got the vote of confidence, Terry McLaurin. He got the contract from the Commanders. So they see what fantasy managers see, and that they regard him as like elite wide receiver. But what can we realistically expect for a guy who was wide receiver 33 by average PPR points? Can we see him get back in the top 24? Just what are your expectations for Terry McLaurin?
Yes, yes. So when Wentz was acquired by Washington, I wrote a piece with all sincerity. It was not a trolling piece at all. You know, I saved my trolling for Twitter. That Wentz is by almost every measure an upgrade over Taylor Heinicke, who was almost indescribably bad last year.
The meme. The harder you meme, the harder you fall at quarterback. And all the meme quarterbacks, Taylor Heinicke's fall, but maybe the hardest.
My favorite thing, just as a quick aside, I'm going to get back to Wentz. My favorite thing on Washington area talk sports talk radio was, and Zach Kruger, our colleague, told me about this, when a caller said the Commanders need to acquire Aaron Rodgers so that Taylor Heinicke can sit behind him for 3 years. and learn from him and then take over.
Wow. I don't know if they realize Taylor Heineke's like 31.
That's good. You know, we are all armchair GMs. Yeah, Taylor Heineke is 44 years old. No, and so Wentz is an upgrade now, but we have disturbing reports out of Commanders training camp, where apparently their defensive line coach was fired out of nowhere today.
Yeah, that was very bizarre. I mean, very Commanders.
Sam Mills, the defensive line coach, has been working with Ron Rivera for 10 years, and he was fired over a difference of opinion. So the Athletic's Ben Standig reported recently that Carson Wentz has had, quote, an assortment pack of misfires. He says this: quarterbacks throwing two receivers against air, quarterbacks throwing two receivers against air, basically with no defense, is the equivalent of a layup line. Yet Wentz routinely has bricked passes in various directions, overthrowing or firing too far out in front has been the most common issue. Now this, you know, goes hand in hand with how he operated in Indianapolis and his final 2 years in Philadelphia. The accuracy is a major, major issue. It makes me very concerned that McLaurin maybe can get into the wide receiver two range, but man, I'm not excited at his ADP.
With just drawing a number out of your head, like what sounds right for Terry McLaurin? You said probably not top 24. I'm like, if I say wide receiver 28, like what number to you sounds right?
Yeah. For Terry McLaurin? I think wide receiver 33 is like last year was pretty much as bad as it's going to get from McLaurin, because he's really good. Like, you know, you put him in not a great offense, like a functional offense, and he's a top 12 receiver, I think. But you know, so I think that, you know, 28, 26, you know, I'm not discounting 20 receiver 24, that he could do that, you know, if they're forced into pass heavy game scripts and everything. But this is a team that their only success last year came when they established the hell, excuse my French, out of the run, you know, and they became a massively run heavy team for about 5 weeks, and McLaurin became a non-factor in fantasy. I'm afraid of that once again this year.
Well, yeah, and they want to be a three back backfield, which is always like a huge red flag. Like, yeah, the establishment is coming, and I do think he'll probably stabilize, normalize a bit too. I think in that wide receiver 24 to 28 range, and we know that he's better than that. But I think he will. I think you're right. Last year was probably like the nadir for Terry McLaurin's fantasy production. I think he should have more spiked weeks this year. He's had some injury issues, but he's like been playing hurt a lot the past few years. And just, I think maybe with Carson Wentz, he was all the way back in 2017, the torn ACL. But I think that began kind of like a snowballing with his body, where he's kind of almost seems like he's getting like Cam Newton syndrome to me, where his arm doesn't appear like quite as dead as Cam's did by the end, but there's just like not a lot on these pads. And like when he does put a lot on, it's kind of like he's having like heave the ball. And it just seems like Carson Wentz is just not right physically.
Yeah.
Hasn't been for some time.
I totally agree there. I will say, as an aside to what Ben Standig reported on Wentz's inaccuracy on intermediate throws, weirdly, he's been kind of good on the deep ball in training camp. And that's not a shock, because he has a strong arm. He has been pretty good on deep balls. And Taylor Heinicke, as I wrote back in whatever March or whatever it was when they acquired Wentz, Taylor Heinicke was by far the worst deep ball thrower in the league last year. And just anecdotally, if you watched the football team, as they were called, if you watched them at all last year, it was a nightmare. Every time Heinicke wound up to throw it downfield, you just knew something bad was going to happen. And indeed, it did.
He was the true. He's one of the ultimate, like, confidently steps into an interception, like Baker Mayfield. And Baker, we hope Baker is confidently stepping into like actually good throws this year. Because talk about a guy who is not healthy. The Commanders, I just alluded to, it was just, they want this now to be a three-man backfield where J.D. McKissic, I mean, like, they moved heaven and earth to re-sign J.D. McKissic after he had literally signed with another team, essentially. So they wanted to keep the pass catcher J.D. McKissic. They added another early down back in Brian Robinson, someone to cut in into Antonio Gibson's workload, and just has Antonio Gibson kind of become a stay away for you, Denny? Or did you draft him in the Apex League?
Yes, I did, in fact. And I'm here.
Why were you okay? Why were you comfortable drafting
Antonio
Gibson? For the listeners who don't know, Apex League is like a league where it's like a lot of the biggest names in the industry. It's like real like dog eat dog type of league, but you were comfortable drafting Antonio Gibson. So maybe take me through that.
I was, and I'm here to defend myself. First of all, the Apex League is a league where wide receiver ADP is destroyed so quickly that you feel pretty good about getting, I don't know, Julio Jones in the third round.
No, I just got Darius Slayton in the ninth round. So feeling really good about that. Brown, I've got him in the queue. I really hope he stays there.
It's an exaggeration, but just barely. So you have running back ADPs plummet, really, in you know, most of these Apex drafts. I got Antonio Gibson in the eighth round because I felt like at that point he's worth a gamble. Sixth round, I was looking at him and said, no, it's too early. Seventh round, I started to get interested. Eighth round, I said, okay, all right, fine, uncle. I cried uncle for the Zoomers out there. Who knows what that means? And I took him because, you know, at some point, talent has to play some factor. Am I wrong here? I mean, he's really excellent. He's an excellent pass catcher. He's a good runner. I know what they did with Robinson. I know that they, like you said, moved up heaven and earth to, for some reason, bring back McKissic. But I'm okay with Gibson there. I think that he can be serviceable for fantasy purposes at a certain point.
I mean, the eighth round, there's almost like no downside to that. So you said talent has the kind of matter, but also it's like role has the kind of matter. Like, even if the role is decreasing, I mean, I think we can still be pretty confident in like 10 to 15 weekly touches for Antonio Gibson. That, you know, that's probably like his floor for touches. So it's hard to see him dropping below 10 touches, which would, of course, not trying to undersell like that. That would be a disaster.
Right.
It 10 would. To 15, he would still be fantasy like viable.
And I also think, you know, just the chaos of the regular season, the known unknowns. The unknown unknowns. I don't know how that.
Check out the Errol Morris documentary on Donald Rumsfeld.
And but you know, that Antonio Gibson could fall into like a more solid, more predictable workload than we think, you know, than we're anticipating. This is the same guy who was going in the second round last year. Excitedly, we were excitedly drafting him. And you weren't.
No,
I know. No. I know.
Because I've been out basically his entire career, kind of like CEH, two big victories for me.
You are against exciting running backs.
Yeah. I get that. Yes. Yes.
And you know that's usually the way to go. I am I'm a sucker for a guy whose ADP drops six rounds in one off season. So I'm good with Gibson, even in the seventh round. You know, in like more normalized leagues.
Do we see any chance that Gibby like basically falls into like the Chase Edmonds zone, where like between the 20s he's getting the ball?
Yeah.
But we know he's not the primary cast badge, but that's just like a fact. Like, if you work that hard to bring back J.D. McKissic, Antonio Gibson's not going to be the primary pass catcher. How truly worried are we about Brian Robinson maybe stealing goal line carries? Or is that getting like, even though he is a third round pick, it's like there's some real draft capital for Brian Robinson. But is that kind of getting into like scared of our own shadow territory?
I think a little bit. I think Brian Robinson has been maybe hyped a little much. Over the past month or two. I know and camp reports say he looks fine and there's no red flags. He's a running back. He's good. But this is the same team that gave goal line carries to Peyton Barber over Antonio Gibson. Peyton Barber, who statistically, I'm sure he's a fine man. Statistically, Peyton Barber is one of the worst running backs to ever play. In recent years.
No, ever. That's fine.
It's truly like his numbers are off the charts bad. And the Washington franchise chose to give him the ball on third and short and goal line situations, which I will never recover from. And I guess that is something to think about.
Denny, you like to find kind of down ballot, so to speak, players to be interested in. Do any of those exist with the Commanders? Diami Brown was a guy we loved last year. There's just no redraft case whatsoever for Diami Brown. Like, you tweeted the other day, I mean, Curtis Samuel's groin injury is now like in its second decade. We don't really know what's going on there. Is there anyone we like in like, say, standard redraft fantasy, like a 12-team league, beyond Antonio Gibson, beyond Terry McLaurin? I mean, are we excited at all about Jahan Dotson? Excited about J.D. McKissic? I don't. Is there anyone beyond like the obvious Commanders to be interested in standard 12-team fantasy?
Curtis Samuel sounds fun. You know, it's the slot, it's outside, it's the backfield, he's returning. He's doing it all, right? They're going to get on the ball. It's a situation. What did they say about Tavon Austin? We're going to give him the ball 25 times.
The web back 12 to 24 times per game. Yeah. So they created a new position and then the widest possible touch.
Yeah.
Like window.
And
I mean, we're saying 10 to 50 touches a game for Tavon. We're the second team to have Tavon Austin.
Yeah.
And we think the big problem was that he wasn't getting 10 to 50 touches a game.
So Kurt, as fun as that sounds, I don't think that you can draft Curtis Samuel with any confidence that he'll fall into an every week role. I do think that Dotson is the guy. Like, if there's going to be a second pass catching, the fantasy relevant dude on this offense, it's probably going to be him. I've seen comparisons made to Terry McLaurin himself in the way that Dotson plays. That's good because McLaurin has been, like I said, excellent on every level, deep, intermediate, everything, breaking tackles, yards after the catch. So I guess Dotson in deeper leagues might be interesting, but man, this offense just seems like no fun at all.
The offense is no fun, but I'll say Jahan Dotson, even if it's like a 12-team league, just with your buddies, it's not like the sharpest group or whatever. Like, you shouldn't let a first round real life wide receiver go undrafted. It's just like a mistake made over and over again, kind of ignoring, because we hate the situation, but he's the number 16 overall pick. And like, it was kind of like the same thing happened last year with Kadarius Toney. Like, we didn't even like consider drafting Kadarius Toney because we just hated the situation. It didn't make any sense. We didn't like the coach, but then, you know, then injuries got in the way. But when Kadarius Toney actually plays, like, oh, that's why this guy was a top 20 pick. Like, he's really, really good. And
it happened with Odell Beckham.
I was going to say Odell Beckham too, number 12 over a pick. And that year, I mean, he quite literally didn't even have an ADP like Odell Beckham. and then had one of the greatest rookie seasons of all time, despite not playing the first four games. And just don't overthink the situation so much when a guy has that kind of real life draft capital.
Sure.
And sure, you might not end up, might end up cutting him really quickly, but like if you're kind of like sifting through late round flyers, let the guy being a real life first round pick be a compelling tiebreaker, I'd say.
That's a great point. You could do way worse than follow that kind of logic.
And so, yeah, we'll be right back after this. Prep for your draft with the latest player rankings, projections, and more in the NBC Sports Edge Fantasy Football Draft Guide. It's powered by RotoWorld, the premier source for player news and fantasy information. Take advantage of our preseason special and get the draft guide for only $5 when you use promo code DRAFTGUIDE at checkout on NBCSportsEdge.com/draftguide. Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News will be joining us soon to talk about the New York Giants. But Denny, the Dallas Cowboys, and we might have to like kind of sandwich the New York Giants talk with some Cowboys talk. The Giants are used to that. We're like, you know, they're in the big market. They're supposed to be like one of the biggest teams in the world, and then everyone just talks about the Cowboys even when they're worse.
Yes, it's true.
So we might be bookending our Giants talk with the Dallas Cowboys. But I take it you regret to inform on Zeke good? Question mark, Denny.
I do not take pleasure in reporting this. I am pro Tony Pollard and take no pleasure in reporting that Ezekiel Elliott was actually quite good last year before he, let me check my notes. Yes, tore his PCL. I have a PCL issue and it hurts. And I don't
By the way, are you still like faking this injury ahead of the expo?
Yeah, no, it's not good. It's not good.
Don't play.
Yeah.
don't play if you have
I could be the quarterback. You don't have to be an athlete to
be the quarterback. You actually have a pretty solid arm. You should be the quarterback.
I'm lobbying Lawrence to be the quarterback. So So I wrote about this in four splits that matter for fantasy football, which you can find on NBCSportsEdge.com. One of the splits was before and after Ezekiel Elliott's week four injury. You can check out, you know, exactly how it breaks down, but basically he was way better than average and not elite in any definition of elite, but way better than average before the injury and was abysmal after the injury. And it makes sense. It makes sense. Like a guy with that much mileage on him, that kind of knee injury, no more explosion, no more ability to cut, you know, it makes total sense. So if he is fully healed, which he should be, then I think that he makes a lot of sense in certain draft builds as a fourth round pick. And what I mean by that is if you spend your first three on maybe like two wide receivers and an elite tight end, Zeke's not the worst fourth rounder. And I can't believe I'm saying
that. Yeah, the lawyers have heard all they need to hear.
I know.
You've been fired.
I it's fine. I get it.
So that's why I'm going to have to talk to Pat Leonard by myself because you've been fired. Now check out Denny's article on Zeke. It was pretty interesting. Yeah. And you can't put our hand, can't bury our heads in the sand on Zeke.
Right. And another thing about burying your head is you look at Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy, who every day have something positive to say. He's a cornerstone, keystone, this, that, foundational human being in the state of Texas. everything positive you could possibly, and that matters. We have to account for that. Like they are going, especially Jerry Jones is going to look for any reason to keep playing Ezekiel Elliott as the primary back. That doesn't mean that Tony Pollard will be useless for fantasy, but man, it puts a ding in, you know, in his potential. If the team is just completely unwilling to go away from Zeke,
Zeke is going to turn Texas Cowboys blue. Check out Denny's article on Ezekiel Elliott on NBCSportsEdge.com. And we'll finish off the show with a little Cowboys talk. But now it is our pleasure to welcome in the New York Daily News' Pat Leonard. You can find him on Twitter at PLeonardNYDN. Pat, it is yet another summer of change in East Rutherford. New coach, new GM this time. Not a new quarterback, though. And so we might as well just start big picture. How is Daniel Jones? He didn't have his fifth-year team option picked up. This is a contract year. How is he progressing? Has he looked up to the challenge of Brian Daboll's system? Or do you get the sense that maybe they're scaling things back for Daniel Jones? Just what is the state of Danny Dimes right now?
Hey, Pat, Danny, thanks for having me. No, it's a good question. I would say coming into camp that Daboll and Shane tamped down expectations on what should be expected from this year's team. Obviously, that doesn't bode well for Daniel Jones. they are going to give him all the tools they hope in the offense with Brian Daboll and actually Mike Kafka calling the plays, at least to start the preseason. It looks like that's how it's going to go in the regular season. They want to give him all of those tools to succeed. He will be their starter week one in Nashville against the Titans. And actually, they're kind of being extremely cautious with weapons like Kadarius Toney, Kenny Galladay, all these guys who are often hurt, specifically because they're just trying to get them to week one so they're on the field for this guy to complete a pass or two. But, you know, the reality, Pat, I mean, you're kind of implying it in your question is like, you know, this guy has been in so many offenses.
It was a leading question.
Yeah, but no, but, you know, he's been in so many offenses in 4 years, and I'm sure you've talked to people and you know yourself, like, this isn't an easy offense to learn either. And so, you know, having Josh Allen helps an offense be a top of the NFL offense, and it's going to be hard for the Giants to get it all together right away and for Jones to succeed.
So for any kind, so Daniel Jones, like one of his biggest bugaboos and something we like Denny and I have kind of obsessed over is that like when he actually does pass downfield, his numbers are good. Like the advanced metrics are good, but he does it like so infrequently. And that was the kind of thing that made him like a horrible stylistic fit with Kenny Galladay. I mean, do you see any like effort to get Daniel Jones to throw down the field more this summer? Or is that kind of thing hard to discern from just training camp practices?
I would say this, Pat. They run the same offense, and Tyrod throws the ball down the field a lot more than Daniel does.
Oh my goodness.
So I don't know if it's that they're getting different plays. I think the quarterback's making a different decision.
It's the decision he likes to make.
That's how I view it. And, you know, yeah. I do think Daniel is diplomatic. And I do think there have been times in his career where things have gone wrong and it was the receiver running the wrong route or an offensive lineman missing something and he takes it on himself. And so, you know, kind of like Eli Manning before him, he's like that kind of guy. So it hasn't always been on him, but the reality is he's up and down right now in camp the same way he's always been. And I think you make an interesting point too. It's like, coming in from the draft, I think it was assumed that Daniel was, if anything, smart and that maybe the physical traits weren't where some other guys were, but he can make up with it with all these intangibles. Sometimes it's the opposite with him. He actually, I think, does have the physical traits, but it's the decision-making that isn't always there. And honestly, especially in the red zone. But, you know, to your point, they have to open those opportunities for him, and then he just has to kind of pull the trigger.
Statistically, Daniel Jones has been really, really good on passes that travel 20 yards down the field or more in his career. So I'm surprised that it's not happening more. In fact, I read that Tyrod Taylor was briefly put in for Daniel Jones after some frustration. Is that right?
Yeah, Denny. So you're on it. So yesterday, first four plays with Daniel Jones in the first team offense went poorly. So Daboll, turns out, wanted to tell something to Jones, but he said he didn't want to stop the practice. So he sends Tyrod in to run.
Creates an alibi.
Yeah. So Tyrod runs one play. He completes a pass to Toney, which, by the way, was the first completion in five plays. And then he puts Jones right back in. So we can accept that. Listen, he really wanted Jones to say, I think you're not seeing this. He said today it was some sort of read that he wanted to communicate to him. But we all know, and Daboll knows as a head coach, what it means, right?
Yes. When
in front of everybody, you put number two out in front of number eight.
Yes, absolutely. And one other note on Daniel Jones, I wanted to ask you about, you know, his rushing prowess and that part of his game, because, you know, for fantasy purposes, we are very interested in any quarterback who's willing to take off out of the pocket and gain yards on the ground. It's very valuable for fantasy scoring. Daniel Jones has given that to us, despite
glimpses of it.
Well, in his rookie season, I should say, for sure. And despite the trip in the open field on in prime time, we're trying to forget that still. But do you think that will continue to be part of his game, or will there be any sort of, do you think, design for him to use his legs like that?
Could it be a bigger part? Because this is Daboll, you know, who saw how dangerous that can be with Josh Allen.
Yeah, no, we actually saw already a designed quarterback sweep on the goal line.
That would not have happened under Joe Judge.
We saw I will say too that when they are struggling in their pass, when they're passing the ball and they're struggling out of the shotgun, it seems like they, you know, they either call or Jones decides himself he's going to tuck it and run just to get some momentum and get some good feeling back. There's definitely that. He's not Josh Allen, but there's definitely that same built-in freedom for Jones to use his legs when he wants, whether it's called or it's his own decision. There's also a lot of, as you guys know, there's a lot of misdirection. So sometimes Wandale Robinson's at running back, sometimes Saquon's back there, sometimes Kadarius Toney's back there. They're all going in motion. So I think that benefits Daniel Jones as a runner because he likes keeping it, first of all. And for every one time he hands it off to one of those guys who, let's face it, all three of those players are someone you have to commit somebody to if they have the ball. So I think that does benefit Jones from a fantasy standpoint and as a rusher to kind of have the ability, hopefully, to have one fewer defenders running with him when he pulls.
That's an interesting little nugget there that he's getting that freedom, at least, in this new system. I mean, no one would have begrudged, like, the new coaching staff, like, yeah, no, sorry. Like you haven't earned the right to have like any kind of like decision-making freedom with what you've right. shown the first 3 years. So that is interesting. I mean, it's smart when you have an athlete like Daniel Jones.
I will say though, I'm glad you brought this up too, because so they practiced in the stadium one time so far last Friday night, and the first play, you know, his first read's not open. He kind of pumps and the protection's starting to break down a little bit. And he rolls and kind of flushes out to the left, and they weren't playing live. But if they had been, he would have gotten smashed.
Really?
And he was running right into a big hit. Yeah. And so we've seen this before, right? So the freedom is good, but like, as you're saying, like, is that a little bit of a surprise you're giving them at? Because if he doesn't show that he warrants trust there, and like that one play I'm citing, we've already seen now in a thud practice period, that he kind of ran himself right into a big hit.
Oh, so not what you like to see, but you know, it's still only August 9th. So he's got some time. So Pat, you know, Giants fans are probably most fixated on Daniel Jones, but fantasy players are probably most fixated on Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, he's just a fantasy superstar waiting to happen. If he could ever stay healthy, how has he looked in this new offense? We know Brian Daboll was famous for abandoning the run in Buffalo. He might not have that luxury with the Giants. Saquon Barkley's pass catching, though, could hopefully be a big part of the offense. Just how is Saquon looking in the new system? And is he going to catch as many passes as like fantasy managers are kind of dying for?
Yes. Yeah. And he looks very good from a physical standpoint and his conditioning. He looks as good as I've seen him probably since his rookie year, as far as prepared to gain yards after contact, to be a little bit faster and quicker than he's been in the last couple of years, where I felt like he's already really superhumanly strong. He doesn't need to bulk up, but I do think that after his rookie year, he got bigger, but he didn't need to be, you know, he just needs to be fast, and he's already got that strength. And so that's what I see from him. You know, Brian Daboll actually really liked the play the other day that kind of started the fight, where it was a thud period and the defense got angry. But Daboll really didn't have a problem with Barkley kind of lowering his shoulder pads and running Aaron Robinson over. His take on it was like the defender needs to be ready to thud. And so, you know, you have to be encouraged because Barkley hasn't really broken many tackles recently in live NFL games in general. He does look very good. And as from a receiving standpoint, he lines up in the slot as often as he lines up in the backfield, it seems. Now, you know, some days we see heavy run periods. Some day we see heavy pass periods and shotgun and 11 formation. But when they go three wide, which they do often, it seems, and I know obviously they went 3-4 with Daboll's offense in Buffalo and even going to Kansas City with Kafka, Saquon will sometimes start in the backfield, go out to the slot. He'll just start in the slot. He'll start out wide and run a route out wide. We're seeing a lot more of that. And let's be honest too, it's kind of smart to take him out of pass protection situations because he's not good at it, right? And so, you know, if you want him on the field, but you can't have him pass protect, if Daboll's content having him as a receiver and being on the field instead of somebody else, you know, I think you're utilizing him the way that he should be, frankly.
If Saquon Barkley struggles with injuries again this year, and we're hoping, of course, that does not happen, I wanted to get your take on who might fill in as the primary ball carrier in this offense. I see Matt Breida is listed as the RB2 on the depth chart. Do you think it would be Breida?
It's a good question, Denny, and it's an I think it's an unanswered one. First of all, Braid is already hurt. Doesn't look like he's playing in the first preseason game.
It's kind of his thing, too.
Yeah, we don't know exactly what that is. And really, it's very thin back there. I mean, they already worked out Devontae Booker, who was their leading rusher last year. They didn't sign him, but
I actually missed that. I mean, that's not a good sign.
They lack depth in a lot of positions, but I think this is what would excite you if you're a fantasy owner. And from a dynasty perspective, too, Wandale Robinson, you know, I can see why they drafted him because, first of all, look at the future. Galladay's gone after this year.
Right.
Tony is unreliable. You know, he's been held out of a lot of 11-on-11 periods. He might have gotten dinged up today. We're not really sure in a jog through. Wandale, though, is here for the now and the future. He runs with the first team offense regularly. They will put him in the backfield instead of Saquon on plays, even when Saquon is on the field. He played running back as well as receiver in college. I think if I'm a fantasy owner, I honestly think that the ceiling is highest, maybe even this year, for Wandale. Wow. Because Saquon's going to take attention away, and now Saquon's going to get the ball. But certainly if you're a dynasty player, number 17 on the Giants offense – is somebody that you need to take a real close look at.
This is interesting. I feel a tingle in my,
and that's just like his ADP was, he's already like kind of like one of the like under the radar guys. People have been obsessed with in best ball drafts and underdog. I think you just like poured a little jet fuel on that. That's
tell me if I'm wrong here, you're saying that possibly if Barkley were to miss time, that Robinson would absorb at least some of that backfield work.
I do think so. I think that the offense is designed for both Robinson and Tony to carry the ball as even as running backs, not necessarily just as a jet sweep from wide receiver. I will say and couch it with, they've already shown that they know they need help at running back. The kind of the outside the box, like mid-season, maybe the guy starts picking up steam guy if he stays healthy and earns their trust is Jayshon Corbin, the undrafted rookie. He is the same. He's kind of in that fast mold of a kind of an outside runner like a Matt Breida, but you know, he's young and still learning. You can see them grooming him for maybe something down the line, but it's really Barkley, Breida, Antonio Williams, and Jayshon Corbin right now. And Gary Brightwell, who Brightwell doesn't have that same kind of burst. So, yes, Brightwell could factor in, but yes, the answer to your question is yes. I think Robinson would absorb even more touches if Barkley was out.
That's thank you. Thank you for that information.
I think we should just end the show there.
Yeah. this is good. This is fantastic stuff.
Denny, Kadarius Toney. So you mentioned Kadarius Toney, Pat, who he's just like one of the loves of fantasy players' lives because of what he showed. It was, you know, as you alluded to, quite limited action last year. So many – it's kind of like small injury issues, but missed so many snaps, missed so many games last year. But
yeah,
like the stop start ability looked like truly rare from Kadarius Toney. But you know, then there were brief offseason rumors he could be traded. That seemed almost like designed to kind of like wake him up a little bit, get his attention. Mm. So, just how is he fitting in with the new coaching staff and the new system?
No, it's a good question. Well, they are. I mean, they're dropping his workload dramatically. Like, there's a period of every practice where Tony and Galladay, while other guys are doing harder work, individual work, they kind of just stand there with Mike Groh, the receivers coach, and Cade Knox, an offensive assistant. They go over plays. They kind of have a catch. You know, these are two guys coming off injuries in the spring. Tony had a knee procedure that he's kind of working back from. So they both really didn't get much spring work. They did call a team. That was actually my report. They did call teams.
I thought that was you. So I wanted to label that as you. But then live, I was like, was that Pat?
Yeah, no problem. No. So they did call teams, but the issues he had here last year, people are aware of them. And so they were, I'll try to summarize this briefly, injuries, maybe even some that some guys thought they could play through, but he wasn't. Got COVID twice, was out such an extended period of time, had a holdout as a rookie, essentially a lack of reliability. So then what happened was he started this offseason by not showing up for the offseason program, and he wasn't there, I think, almost for the first full month. And shockingly, after I reported that, he shows up about 24 hours later, ready to rock.
Instantaneous.
Right? So, but how is he fitting in? The answer is, now that he's still on the team, they are trying to use his skill set in, let's face it, if you could pick two offenses in the NFL that Tony might excel in, you'd probably have picked the Bills and the Chiefs. And here they are melding them together. You know, I think the opportunities are there. We've seen him and Wandale Robinson both in wildcat formations at times. We know Tony was a high school quarterback. He can throw. He can spin it. He can throw the ball 60 yards easy.
Wow.
So the question is,
can he come into that? Yeah, he's a freak, man.
He is a freak. He really, I tell this to people all the time, and I know not to compare them as players because Lamar's an MVP, but Lamar Jackson is the only other guy I've ever seen move the way that Tony does, where like it's almost like no matter who is guarding him, his quickness and ability to change direction is so unpredictable that even if you've seen it on tape a million times, it's just different seeing it in person. So he's super talented. But even we just saw it today at practice. Like it was a jog through. He's already been taken out of 11 on 11s three of their previous 10 days to rest his body. And it looked like today that he was a part of it and then he wasn't. He was kind of getting some attention. So to describe him as delicate, I would say is accurate and fair. So that's why they're trying to be so careful with him, because they see the high ceiling. But from a fantasy perspective, like he's just not reliable to stay in the lineup and in on the field. It's almost like a late round flyer on a guy who you could, or even a free agent pickup who you could pop in and could just have a crazy game like he did against the Cowboys last year. But then you don't know if he's going to play the next week.
He did. There was always an issue last year with Tony, except for that, I guess, 2-game stretch. Even that the third game where I think he caught like 4 or 5 passes on the first drive against the Rams and then was hurt and then never, you know, didn't come back in. So I'm still recovering from that. And I think you're right in saying that, you know, he as a player, electric, but also a little bit delicate. Yeah.
Kenny Golladay, folks.
Yes. On the other side, the formation with Kenny Golladay, obviously one of the biggest disappointments in all football last year. His skill set really doesn't seem to mesh with Daniel Jones at all. And what you said a few minutes ago about Jones being reluctant to throw it downfield doesn't sound like that's changed much. How can the Giants, I guess, use Golladay this season, more effectively than last year?
Trying to think of something nice to say. So he's been disappointing. I mean, coming off of such a disappointing year, you would have expected him to come in ready to rock and looking like a different person. Now, I really don't know. It's unusual to not be able to nail this down. I don't know what the injury is that he had in the spring that suddenly kept him out really all spring. He wouldn't say whether it was a lingering thing from last season or new. It felt like something that cropped up and was lower body, like a hamstring or something like that. But we just don't know. But the bottom line is, when I tell you Saquon Barkley came in looking like, you know, his old self, his top condition self, when I look at Kenny Golladay, I see a guy who still doesn't look like he's running at full speed, still looks like he's kind of running in sand a little bit, isn't getting the separation. And I know that his skill always was contested catches. And he did have one really good day in camp I think it was Sunday or maybe late last week, where they gave him a rest day. And then the next day he came out and he was winning jump balls, on the sideline and caught a touchdown and was really had better energy. But frankly, like Colin Johnson is severely outplaying Kenny Golladay here. You know, Colin with 2 L's, Johnson.
I was gonna say the double L.
And he's a 6'6" receiver who, like, if they weren't wearing their numbers, you would mistake him for Golladay standing out there flanked out wide. And so they have a guy with the same body type who is fitting into what they're running. So Golladay doesn't look the part of what this type of offense usually has, but there's a guy with his same body type running circles around him right now. So that's kind of where he's at.
Yeah.
That's, I just wonder if he's this, you know, you say he's a contested catch guy. He was older when he entered the league, relatively speaking. I just wonder if his body's already breaking down. And not to make you speculate on that, but.
No. I'm trying to think of how to say something. I don't see the same fire in him that I would like to see all the time. And I like him as a competitor. Like when he gets into it, like when they beat the Saints last year in New Orleans, he made a really tough gamer catch down the stretch of that game on a slant, you know, took contact right after the ball got there, kind of extended the play, got them. I think it may have been on a field goal drive to tie it, send it to overtime. But like, that was the kind of play where it's like, okay, I see why you signed this guy. I see why you want him. You see he can put you on his back, but he's only really done it that once. And it's hard to look at how he's entered this and say that he has any kind of fire to prove people wrong. He says he does, but he's not showing it. So,
well, wasn't expecting your overarching Kenny Golladay point to be, he's getting outplayed by Colin Johnson. So,
Former Jaguar is great, Colin.
Yeah, so not sure what to do with that bit of information, but we've taken up a lot of your time already, Pat, but just real quick before you get out of here, would be remiss to not ask about two guys. Fourth-round rookie tight end Daniel Bellinger is being labeled as clearly the starting tight end by many in the Giants media. Does that match your perception? Could that translate to maybe a meaningful pass-catching role? And then just Darius Slayton, like second and third-team offense, it sounds like. Does it look like his time is done in New York?
I'll go backward there. Yeah, it looks like Slayton doesn't look like he's going to make the team. We still have a ways to go here. Guys could get hurt. He could pick it up. But I say this, like I wrote in Sunday's Daily News, like at least the feeling I get around the league is that like people know he can be a pretty good player, but I'm not sure the Giants and Joe Shane could really have any leverage to get anything because people are expecting him to get released, right? So say like, well, we could get him for free. Why would we pay anything? So that's kind of where that is. I mean, he ran a lot of snaps with Davis Webb in the third team offense in that Friday night practice. That's kind of how you have to know. He did have a really good day the other day with Tyrod in the second offense, but it doesn't look good, you know, but we'll see. And then Daniel Bellinger, he is the clear, as you watch practices day in and day out, he's their clear number one tight end. And it's a really thin room. I mean, Ricky Seals-Jones.
It is a really thin room.
Mm-hmm. Ricky Seals-Jones disappeared off the face of the earth. Like, he's clearly dealing with some sort of ailment. I mean, he was dialed back in the spring, might have practiced once in camp. I actually talked to him. I think it was after the second practice. And then he kind of said, yeah, we're just competing this and that. And we haven't seen him since. And then, you know, they have a bunch of young players kind of battling it out. Andre Miller, the undrafted rookie out of Maine, was starting to assert himself.
Maine as a school.
Exactly. He was starting to assert himself. And then he just broke his arm 2 days ago. And so now they have Jeremiah Hall, a guy from Oklahoma, kind of playing that fullback / tight end. Bellinger is the number one tight end with Chris Myrick competing, though he's been really struggling. So will it be pass catching opportunities?
Probably not, question mark.
You know, I'll say this, you know, I actually told him this today. Like, if I were picking a starting five in a basketball tournament, he'd be my power forward. I mean, he looks the part. There's no doubt about it. But will he be a focal point? No. Do they hope that he could be? Because he is a really big target, especially in the red zone. That's where I would say from a fantasy perspective, like, hopefully he becomes red zone, especially if Galladay's not reliable down there. You know, you need a big body like Bellinger.
Yeah, maybe he could dunk a few balls on teams that don't defense the seam well.
I mean, it sounds like he's going to get a full complement of pass routes. And, that, you know, that could make him somewhat interesting for fantasy. I'm trying to paint a rosy picture.
No, for sure. And also because they look like they're going to run a lot of 11 personnel, you know, a lot of times, most often, it seems he would be the only tight end on the field.
Well, Pat, really, really great stuff. Thank you so much for taking the time. We know it's super busy during travel. Again, Tom Curran from NBC Sports Boston claimed he wasn't even that busy right now. He's like, oh, that's like NFL. But I've got the sense you guys are pretty busy. And
oh, yeah, the cushy Curran job. Yeah.
There you go. So, no doubt.
No, really, thank really you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate you. And by the way, you're just the bright lights in New York are not too much for Pat Leonard. New York Daily News at P Leonard NYDN on Twitter. Always awesome stuff. Pat, thank you so much for taking time to join us.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Denny. Take care.
Awesome stuff from Pat Leonard, and been an awesome show so far. We're almost done. Got us a little more Cowboys talk. Can't only talk about Zeke.
I'm still reeling over this over what he said about Wandale Robinson.
He had a lot to reel about. Positive Wandale, kind of negative Tony. You know, the very negative Kenny Golladay sounds very concerning.
I know. Yeah, the Golladay signing was probably the worst in like the last 10 years.
And I do think, you know, it's just like my pet theory from far away. I mean, and also just based though on injury reports, his body just seems to be breaking down.
Big receivers really don't age well.
Extremely poorly still.
We see this all the time. And Golladay, like you said, entered the league late. He had two really productive seasons in Detroit, and then it started going downhill. But the Robinson thing, I mean, I feel like, you know, his ability to possibly play in the backfield if, you know, Barkley misses time, man, that gives him whole new value.
Yeah, that's a really, really, really interesting one to file away.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics, because that's who we are.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Denny, with the Cowboys, who do we like as a pass catcher behind CeeDee Lamb, if anybody? Michael Gallup has said he's not going to be ready for the opener. Jalen Tolbert is apparently starting. I mean, we like Dalton Schultz. He's the tight end six on Yahoo. He's the tight end six and underdog. So kind of like the sharps and like the more conventional crowds are kind of converging on Dalton Schultz. Who do we like as Cowboys pass catchers behind CeeDee Lamb?
I didn't know that they had any receivers behind CeeDee Lamb. So if you give me a moment, I'm going to do some research.
Yeah, here, Cowboys, ESPN roster.
Depth chart. Noah Brown is sort of interesting. Last year when the Cowboys had lost to Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Gallup, I think for a time on Thanksgiving against the Raiders.
Where they lost as a great Thanksgiving American tradition.
Yes, and a very good game.
It was a good game.
So Brown stepped in as a starter, ran 92% of the routes, caught 6 of his 9 targets for 53 yards. I know that's not anything to write home about, but, you know, everything looked solid. Otherwise, he drew a route on 20% of his pass routes in that game. That was second only to Cedric Wilson, who was weirdly dominant in that game.
And then weirdly given a very big contract by the Miami Dolphins.
Just not quite making much sense there. But I think Noah Brown would slot in nicely as the wide receiver too, but probably the third pass catcher in the pecking order behind, obviously, Lamb and Schultz. So, you know, really, really not sure exactly where his targets are going to come from, but I would point to him as the guy.
And do you share any of the Kyle Dvorchik sicko enthusiasm for Jalen Tolbert, or do you just think it's kind of like we're getting out of our skis with that one. He is a third rounder, so it's not like he's like a sixth rounder.
Yeah.
Any interest in Jalen Tolbert?
Yes. Some interest. And honestly, like, would I take Tolbert over Noah Brown? You know, I might.
Well, I'd say you probably should.
I mean, yeah, but right? But like, I
feel on
like
some upside. I mean, I don't know where the upside is really going to come from Noah Brown.
No, I mean, you know, career long wise, obviously you're looking at Tolbert as the guy, but from an immediate impact standpoint and how or where you're going to be able to use these guys in fantasy as like a desperation flex in deep formats or something, I could see Brown being, you know, possibly a more reliable option who runs more routes as part of the a two wide receiver set for as long as Gallup is out now. So I do think he's being overlooked a little bit.
That is fair. He caught almost 20 passes last year. So it's not like he was someone who played and like never caught the ball. I mean, not that we're like hanging a banner over.
Yeah.
20
right.
Catches,
right. But I will say it in my, four splits to know article. I mentioned that CeeDee Lamb struggled a bit with Amari Cooper off the field.
CeeDee Lamb.
Friend of the show. And he expressed a little bit, I would say, of frustration when he talked to us about the Cowboys offense and how it operated, especially near the end zone. So look, CeeDee Lamb is obviously very good and he's going at wide receiver 7, which I don't think is egregious.
His ADP is this kind of his entire career kind of always outpaced reality.
From many, I'm going to say something here and I don't mean to, you know, make anybody upset, but like from many standpoints and many measurements, the Cowboys got rid of their best receiver this offseason in Amari Cooper. And Lamb has not thrived with Cooper off the field. I don't know if he's like this alpha force who can just do whatever he wants with opposing secondaries completely focused on shutting him down.
I will say that it's still an open question where we haven't truly seen it. But we wouldn't be shocked if like it does kind of all come together for CeeDee Lamb this year. So he's treated in fantasy as a player who has accomplished more than he actually has, but he is still like right there, like where it should not be surprising. Like if CeeDee Lamb kind of like seals the deal this year, that kind of thing.
Yeah, man, I don't know. I mentioned in my piece, if I have to choose, and I often do have to choose between Lamb and Tyreek Hill, I feel way more confident in Tyreek Hill and his role and his dominance as a pass catcher.
That's very interesting. I haven't really been put on the spot with that too much somehow this summer yet. I'm kind of not ever finding myself in that zone. I don't know. That's an interesting one.
I think, you know, just as an aside, I think Tyreek Hill is the best receiver in football, period.
Well, if the game is like a game of special traits, Tyreek Hill's speed is still probably the most special trait at the receiver position.
That's it. Like no one is that fast.
No one is that fast. And nothing is still ultimately more important than, I mean, there's more, like route running is more important, but Tyreek's speed is still like the ultimate killer app at the receiver. We'll just end the show real quick. Kind of just tying back into Zeke. So we don't see any chance that Tony Pollard is going to pass Zeke. I think that ship has kind of sailed. Are we just giving up on that possibility?
Yeah. I mean, not organically, you know, I will not concede even for one moment that the Cowboys will eventually come to grips with Zeke's, you know, descent into mediocrity and say, no, we can't do this anymore. We have to start Tony Pollard. We have to get him the majority of the carries. He's our guy. That is not going to happen. So when you draft Tony Pollard in the eighth, you cannot envision that as a realistic scenario. You can't. He could be more involved in the pass game because there's basically no one behind Lamb and Schultz, as we just said. So that could happen. And PPR-wise, that could be nice. But he's not going to just take over. It's going to require an injury.
I mean, he was such a good runner last year, but too, he's almost completed an entire rookie contract of just being the pass catching back. And in the NFL, if that label sticks on you for more than 2 or 3 years, it's just kind of, it doesn't matter how good of a runner you are. You can ask Duke Johnson, like, you are just a pass catching back.
That's right.
And it seems like Tony Pollard has fallen into this. Any final thoughts on the Cowboys or we wrap up the show, Denny?
No, I mean, Pollard, just to speak on Pollard for a second, he was really good as a rusher last year in limited capacity. I don't know how that changes if he gets a bigger workload. You know, that does change tend to change things for guys who are used to seeing 5 or 6 carries in a game and suddenly see 15. Things can change. But I'm okay with his ADP, but I'm not thrilled about it. I will say that.
Yeah. So Dallas Cowboys, for years, the past couple of years, just like overflowing with fantasy relevance. Just doesn't look that way this year. So really, really interesting team, a really, really interesting division, really, really interesting guests today. Thank you so much to Dave Zangaro from NBC Sports Philadelphia for talking to the Eagles, to New York Daily News' Pat Leonard for talking to the Giants, to NBC Sports' Denny Carter for talking to the Commanders. And I hope you're ready. I'm assuming you don't have DirecTV and Sunday Ticket this year, so I hope you're ready to watch a lot of Commanders games again.
I'm always ready.
You're always ready to watch the Commander. We'll mix in some Ravens for you.
Thank God,
Denny. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening to our entire division preview series. I thought it was excellent. So much great stuff from all of our guests. Go back and check it out, airing over the past month. We had the AFC East on Monday with Joe Biscaglia talking the Bills and Tom Curran talking the New England Patriots. Just great stuff every week. So check out the entire series if you're new to the series right now. For Denny, Denny's got a final word here. What is it, Denny?
Thank you for catching that. You guys have to go back and listen to the Monday show with Crane and Pat Daugherty, because Tom Curran says something about, I'm not going to give it away because I need you to listen. He says something about Kendrick Bourne that will knock your proverbial socks off. I believe my socks. I've not found my socks for 24 hours since listening to it. So listen to it. Check it out.
It will blow your minds. It was awesome stuff. So check it out. Check out the site. Denny's got a lot of great stuff. He's the only one who writes anything around here. You know, check out Denny's stuff on the site. Check out Matthew Berry's stuff on the site. I've got some stuff coming up on the site. So for Denny, I'm Pat. We'll catch you later this week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.